So today I'll tell you about my long-standing attempts to lift what I would refer to as a ground state curse for quantum Hall states. Meaning that we very often like to think about quantum Hall states in terms of the properties of the ground state. The goal of this talk would be to go beyond the physics of the ground state and to look at a subset of the excited states that I will claim have universal behavior, just as ground state does. So the theory of this activity we refer to as biometric theory of fractional quantum Hall states. The name of the theory will become clear shortly, where the name comes from. Okay, so before I talk about any physics, I should acknowledge my collaborators. There are two groups of people that I collaborated with on this issue. So the first group is from Princeton, Barry Bradley and Scott Gerritz. Scott is now unfortunately departed from physics, he's in Google. Barry is still in Princeton, but he's moving to Urbana-Champaign. And the second group of people is UChicago crowd, Damson and his student Zun Nguyen, who is now also graduated, and he's now in Oxford. The two main references that I participated in on the topic are these two papers, correspondingly with the different groups of people, and there is one more paper in progress. If I have time, I'll tell you what it's about. I also should acknowledge that this activity did not come out of vacuum, and there are a lot of historic references that's related to this work. So the earliest one goes back to 1986. It's incredible, this work has only two citations, so I'm sure nobody of you have ever heard or read it. And it's 3 pages long, so if I managed to interest you in the subject, I highly recommend it. There is also very insightful work by Ilya Takatlay on hydrodynamics of lowest Landau level. The main, probably, character who inspired this activity is Duncan, who wrote a series of papers about quantum Hall states and about trying to describe the Hamiltonian of the quantum Hall states in some universal language. And the last two papers are the papers that got me interested in the subject by Stanford-Princeton people and by Urbana people. I will refer to these papers throughout the talk, so they don't need introduction now. So most of this talk will consist of the introduction, because the questions I'm going to ask about quantum Hall states are quite delicate. In order to be able to even introduce the words I'm going to be using to ask these questions, I'll have to tell you a lot about quantum Hall states phenomenology. So the introduction will consist of two parts. I'll tell you about the ground state physics that we would like to encode in Shun-Simons theory, but there are many ways we can talk about ground state physics. And in the second part of the introduction, I'll tell you about quite an old story, but somehow somewhat forgotten, due to Gervin, MacDonald, and Platzman, where they introduced a trial state for collective excitation. And there is a lot of nice mathematics and physics that comes up when you talk about this state. I'll tell you about it. Finally, I'll tell you about biometric theory of fractional quantum Hall states, whose one-line introduction would be, it's an effective field theory that describes this mode, which is an excited mode. Okay, so I am probably obliged to show a slide of this kind. The main character in this talk is the electron fluid that forms in a two-dimensional heterostructure, in a two-dimensional suspended graphene sheet, a strong magnetic field. So just as depicted here, this is actually a suspended graphene sample. And the experiment is usually done with this type of system. It's not the only type of experiment that's done, but that's the most classic one, is the current is forced through the sample. Sample is at low temperature and in strong magnetic field. It's perpendicular to this plane, and the voltage, drop of voltage across the direction of current is measured, and that's the ratio of current of voltage to current is Hall resistance. So if we take the setup from the previous slide and tune magnetic field at fixed density and plot the Hall resistance as a function of magnetic field, we find this very famous plot. This plot has three features. So the first feature is that most of it is linear. The second feature are, of course, the plateaus. There are two kinds of plateaus. So the first kind of plateau is where resistance is quantized in terms of in the units of h over e squared as an integer or as a fraction. This talk will concern itself only with the second type of the plateaus. So just from this plot, one thing I want to emphasize is that when the electron fluid is in the plateau, the dissipative resistance, longitudinal resistance, vanishes. So this is true for integer plateaus, and this is true for fractional plateaus. So let me tell you, I cannot do too long of introduction to this story, but let me tell you a few things that are believed to be true when electron fluid is in the non-dissipative fractional quantum Hall state or integer quantum Hall state. So first, what we believe to be true is that there is gap to all excitations, charged and neutral. This is because there seems to be no dissipation in the system. So as a consequence of the gap, all dissipative transport coefficients vanish. The system is in magnetic field, so it breaks parity and time reversal. However, every example that we know is invariant under the PT symmetry, which is parity and time reversal. Quantum Hall states, I probably shouldn't emphasize it too much because it's obvious, but quantum Hall states do not have Lorentz invariance of any kind. So effective field theory, no matter what kind it is, should reflect that. The non-dissipative coefficients are quantized. So the first example of a property of a quantum Hall state is the filling factor, which is ratio of the total number of electrons to the total number of magnetic flux quanta. It's defined by this formula. Hall conductance, when it's quantized, is related to the filling fraction.
So is the PT symmetric important?
I like to follow the Hollywood movies and leaving Easter eggs in the talk. So for the things that I'm telling you about, it's not. But the role of PT symmetry probably should be better understood because we do not know any counterexample to a state that's not PT symmetric.
So in principle, fractional quantum Hall state is the state which does not require any symmetry at all?
In principle, no. But we don't know any counterexample. For example, ancient Simons theory that you can write is automatically PT symmetric. And if you would like to break PT symmetry, you would have to make level imaginary. So I'd like to just leave it there. It's an observation that I think worth emphasizing, and which is never emphasized. Okay. So by the way, I want to also emphasize this point. This formula is idealized, meaning that Hall conductance equals to filling factor in an idealized situation. In real situation, as you have seen, there is a plateau. So in the center of a plateau, this formula works, but outside of the plateau, it doesn't. Okay, so, yes?
Why would you have to make the level imaginary if you build PD symmetry?
Because the way the symmetry breaks down is that time reversal has a complex conjugation. So that gives you extra minus. That's so tangential. I probably should remove the statement if it's okay. So I'm going to show you this plot twice during the talk. What's plotted here, well, clearly here by hand, but here are computer simulations, is the spectrum of the interaction projected to the lowest Landau level. So I want to attract, for this part of the talk, I want to attract your attention only to this part of the energy spectrum. And what this part tells you is that there is energy gap. There are no excitations that continuously go to zero. And there is a zero energy ground state. On a plane, it's non-degenerate. So the main subject of this talk is this dispersion curve that seems to be present generically in fractional quantum Hall states. So above this curve, there is a continuum of excitations, and we cannot distinguish anything in that jungle of continuum of the continuous spectrum. But below the continuum, there is a very clean, so you can see it numerically as well, a very clean dispersion curve that the Gerden-McNaught and Plasman originally talked about. But let's first talk about the energy scales that are much below the energy gap. In this case, there are no dispersing modes, no local degrees of freedom. So the only effective field theory that we can write is ETQFT, which is a field theory of non-local degrees of freedom. Okay, before I tell you about the ETQFT, I want to emphasize that the type of Gedanken experiment that I'll do with ETQFT and with the biometric theory later on is placing the electron fluid in ambient curved space. It doesn't mean that we are studying quantum Hall state close to a black hole. You just should visualize metric as a perturbing field that couples to stress tensor and allows us to extract the correlation functions of the stress tensor with itself. So to this geometry will be non-relativistic. So if you want to visualize something, you can visualize, let's say, a sphere that has some ripples on it, and ripples can change in time. So this type of geometry is described by 2x2 metric that depends on position and on time. In fact, I will use, instead of metric, a more convenient set of data that encodes the geometry, which is the Wielbein fields, which are defined by this formula. So another way, maybe this is easier to read, the metric is just a Wielbein matrix times its transpose. There is a redundancy when you represent metric in this way. Redundancy consists of multiplying the Wielbein fields by an orthogonal matrix. So this redundancy is SO2. And there is a gauge field that corresponds to this redundancy. So this gauge field is called spin connection. The way to visualize spin connection, if you are not familiar with this language, is that spin connection is very roughly acts as a vector potential, but for the geometry. So the curl of the spatial components of the spin connection is Ricci curvature, Gaussian curvature, just like magnetic field is a curl of A. And the temporal component of spin connection only exists if the geometry is changing in time in a non-trivial way. You see it's time derivative sandwiched between the Wielbeins. So this spin connection will be the central object in the talk. That's why I spent so much time talking about it, and I'll remind you about it later on again. Okay, so the simplest effective field theory that we can write that will encode a subset of fractional quantum Hall states is the Chern-Simons theory. So Chern-Simons theory consists of emergent quantum gauge field. I chose it to be with the gauge group U1. There is some integer valued coefficient standing in front. This theory is going to be coupled to external electromagnetic field, so we can calculate the linear response functions. So this is the coupling to external electromagnetic field. And this theory is going to be coupled to geometry of space. This is unusual if you're used to TQFTs, because TQFTs are more or less objects that, by definition, don't depend on the geometry of space. Here we will forcibly couple it to something that's called Wien z-term. So now about the coefficients. So this coefficient will determine the Hall conductance. This coefficient has a meaning of the electric charge of the constituent particles. It's conventionally set to 1 because the liquid is made from electrons. And this coefficient I will talk about at length. Roughly speaking, this coefficient tells you how the electron degrees of freedom couple to the curved space. So it has the meaning of spin. I want to emphasize that the first two terms are Lorentz invariant. So they cannot be the whole story for the quantum Hall states. This term does break Lorentz invariant manifestly because I only chose the spatial components of the spin connection. This action, somehow reference disappeared. This action was first written by Wen and Z, and correspondingly, this term is now known as Wen Z term. So I have to assume that you're somewhat familiar with the consequence of these two things, of these two terms, and I'll tell you more about the term that you are probably less familiar with, the Wen Z term. So one of the effects of the Wen Z term is that the electron density of the quantum Hall fluid couples to external magnetic field. Well, that's not consequence of transition, that was consequence of the coupling to electromagnetic field. And it couples to the local curvature of the sample. And the strength of the coupling is determined by the coefficient of the Van Zee term. So this formula, perhaps not enlightening, but its integrated version is actually quite useful. Integrated version means that I, let's say, consider quantum Hall state on a Riemann surface with Euler characteristic chi, and I integrate this formula over the surface. Then I find that the relationship between number of electrons and number of magnetic flux, quanta, is shifted by the order one number. So this is Euler character, and this is this number is related to that one by a factor of two. It's just a convention. So unimaginatively, this coefficient, for the reason that it shifts the relationship between n and phi, is called shift. This coefficient is quantized, and it characterizes the fractional quantum Hall state. What it means is that two fractional quantum Hall states at the same mu can have different s. And that would mean that these two fractional quantum Hall states are different. Example would be Phi-fian and anti-Phi-fian. Those are two states at filling factor 5 half, they have different shifts. If we could measure shift, we would know which one is observed. Fortunately, we cannot measure shift yet. Okay, so there is a transport coefficient that's associated to this quantum number that's also not as often discussed. And this coefficient, this transport coefficient, is a quantum viscosity of the quantum Hall states. I want to emphasize that viscosity is quantum because it exists at zero temperature and is proportional to h bar. And its quantization is a little bit more subtle than quantization of Hall conductance, because the natural units for viscosity and at zero temperature is h bar times density. So it is the ratio of viscosity to density that is quantized in the units of h bar. And the quantization is again determined by this number. To argue the quantization of the viscosity, I had to assume global rotational invariance. But this formula exists and makes sense without global rotational invariance. So various properties like that were discussed all the way back from starting from 1983 when Haldane started to analyze fractional quantum Hall states on a sphere numerically. If you do small number of electrons calculations, then this effect is actually dramatic. Okay, so perhaps another interesting qualitative effect that follows from the Van Zee term is the gravitational geometric version of a Haranoff-Bohm effect. So imagine having either an electron or a quasi-hole with a spin on a curved surface, and let's drag it in a loop so that the total flux of the curvature through the loop is phi r. Then the wave function that describes this electron or quasi-hole accumulates a phase is proportional to the total flux of curvature through the loop. The coefficient, although I called it S here, has quite complicated structure, but it does have a contribution from the Van Zee term. It also has a contribution from the self-statistics. Okay, so to wrap up the Chern-Simons, let me just quickly say what else Chern-Simons theory provides us with. Can compute various Haranoff-Bohm phases. Those give us electric charges and spins of electron and of quasi-holes. Can compute linked Wilson lines and subtract the Haranoff-Bohm phases. Then we get mutual statistics of various quasi-holes. We can understand the structure of the H modes, which give us tunneling exponents and thermal-hole conductance. We can calculate the linear response by integrating the emergent gauge field out and find Hall conductance, Hall viscosity. Finally, we can study this integral on a sphere or on a torus and discover that quantum Hall states are k-fold degenerate if we're talking about U1 level k. This is by no means the complete summary, but this is probably to convince you that Chern-Simons theory is perhaps a little, somewhat useful. Okay, so this is the end of introduction about Chern-Simons theory. So if you have any questions, yes.
Is there a bulk boundary correspondence for the Van Zee term?
No. That's a very important point, which I forgot to mention. Thanks a lot for asking it. It's different from thermal Hall conductance and conductance in that there is no boundary degree of freedom. Yes.
So the shift plays no role for the thermal Hall conductance?
Shift plays no role in thermal Hall conductance.
Okay. There should be an omega d omega term.
I didn't write it.
Right.
I didn't write it.
Okay.
Towards the end of the talk. The I have to probably make a disclaimer here. Omega d omega term has extremely complex structure that Wenzi originally missed. And part of that purely gravitational Chern-Simons term does contribute to thermal Hall conductance, and another part doesn't. Very subtle story. I'd be happy to tell you about it in private. Okay. So after telling you that Chern-Simons theory is good, let me kind of summarize what we can do if we want to go beyond it currently. So we can study trial states first. Well, you may say, well, trial states are just transverse Wilson lines in Chern-Simons theory, so probably doesn't get anything new. That's not true. Trial states allow you to calculate more observables than Chern-Simons theory does. I will give examples of such observables. Any equal time correlation function of local operator can be calculated using the trial states, but cannot be calculated in Chern-Simons theory. So another method is called flux attachment. Flux attachment is a great procedure to derive Chern-Simons theory. If you want to derive anything beyond it, you usually get things either kind of wrong or really wrong. So another method is exact diagonalization. This probably has been the most useful one. Despite the fact that the exact diagonalization is mostly done for, 9, 10, 15 elections, the GMP mode that I'll tell you about later was first discovered through exact diagonalization and only then was explained by GMP. I want to introduce to you in this talk a new way of doing the physics beyond the ground state, which is bimetric theory. And bimetric theory is in spirit much closer to Chern-Simons theory, meaning that we're not going to derive it from any underlying principles. We're going to postulate a few things to be true that we believe to be true from the microscopic considerations, and then write the most general theory consistent with those things. But if this sounds mysterious, I'll make it very clear if I have time. Okay, so now let's talk about the excited mode that was first discovered by Haldane Rezai in 1985 by doing EDE with 9 electrons, exact diagonalization. And then some nice theory for it was constructed by Gerwin, McDonald, and Plasman. So this mode goes outside of the continuum, as I mentioned to you before. But the regime I will be interested in, regime where effective field theory can be constructed easily, is the very small k. So probably should have said it's energy versus momentum. Huh? And I will be interested in this regime. This regime is very subtle for numerics people, as well as for experimentalists, because this mode goes into continuum. It's very difficult to distinguish what is the continuum and what is this mode. If you ask the right questions, you will get answers that are saturated by this mode only. Yes?
In the spectrum, this is a picture of like charged neutral excitations.
In this spectrum, this is all of the excitations.
Okay.
This is full many-body spectrum. So I guess maybe this picture would be a bit clearer. These are all of the eigenvalues of the Hamiltonian plotted as a function of angular momentum in this case. So there is some continuum, and there is this collective mode, and we will be interested in the part where numerics can see anything. There is also ground state. So it's full many-body spectrum, but of projected Hamiltonian.
Yeah, but that mode you are interested in, it's physically one mode is that again?
Is what?
So physically one mode is that?
It's a quadrupolar excitation.
Second.
It's quadrupolar excitation. So it will be very clear. Uh-huh. Just give me about 10 minutes and it will be very clear what's the meaning of it, at least a small k. At large k, you can think of it as creating a quasi-hole, quasi-particle pair and then dragging it further apart and then that gap has some meaning. So, by the way, I probably should say that unlike anyons, this mode has been observed. So it's maybe a nice thing to discuss because we do have the experimental data on the actual dispersion of this curve in inelastic light scattering experiments. However, the questions I will be interested in are in the regime where experiments can't look.
So this one will show up in like the density spectral function or something like that.
All of this, yes. But you saw the talk, so. Oh, yeah, and this. Okay. So let me postulate a few things that I believe to be true, and post factum I will argue that they are about this mode. So this mode is universally present in fractional quantum Hall states, meaning that we are not aware of an example of a fractional quantum Hall state where this mode is not present. This mode is universally absent in integer quantum Hall states, and I'll explain why. Angular momentum of this mode at small k is 2. And again, in two slides, I'll explain why. Pneumatic phase transition, so spontaneous rotational symmetry breaking in fractional quantum Hall states, can be visualized as this mode going light at k equals 0 at small k regime. Again, I will explain. So given all of this, the effective theory of the JMP mode has to be a theory of a massive spin 2 excitation. So something geometric has to describe this mode. It cannot be a gauge field. Okay, but let's talk first about the microscopic picture of this mode. So this is my interpretation of the summary of the JMP paper, although with some tweaks. So this mode ultimately will end up being just a density wave, but very subtle density wave. So to introduce it, let's introduce the first quantized density operator in momentum space, and let's project this operator to the lowest Landau level. Project to lowest Landau level means that we would like an operator that takes a holomorphic function and produces another holomorphic function. Clearly, this operator doesn't do that because it has z-bar in it. We know how to deal with this. We replace z-bar with d by dz, and then we normal order it. So this is the lowest Landau level projected density operator. A highly non-trivial observation, although arithmetically trivial, but that was made by the Gerwin-McDonald and Plasman originally, is that these projected densities do not commute. In fact, they satisfy what we now call in quantum Hall community Gerwin-McDonald Plasman algebra. And in other communities, that's called a double infinity algebra, which will be clear. So geometrically, this is the algebra of area-preserving diffeomorphisms. Okay, so to make it manifest why there is a relation between the two, let's consider a basis of the operators that act in the lowest Landau level. So lowest Landau level consists of holomorphic functions. So we want to consider operators that take holomorphic functions and produce other holomorphic functions. You can convince yourself that this is a basis of such operators. It's a multiplication by the coordinate to some power and the derivative with respect to coordinate to some power. And we take all possible powers to form a basis. So one fact, nice fact about this basis is that these operators form double infinity algebra. What this means is that you can calculate their commutator, open a textbook on double infinity, compare the commutator to the textbook. And it's the same commutator. We will be interested, for the purpose of this talk, in a subset of these operators that form a closed SL2R subalgebra. So it's an algebra of the global area-preserving transformations. Two shears and one rotation. So these are the two operators. Projected density can be expanded at small momentum in these operators. This is clear just from this formula. Just take small k and Taylor expand, you get a series in momentum and in these operators. So this L and M create, when acting on the ground state, create a new states that are all confined to the lowest Landau level at momentum k. Okay, so JMP mode, as originally introduced, is the projected density wave applied to the true ground state. in general, this mode is difficult to analyze, but I would like to expand it in small k and take the leading, let's only consider k so small that k cubed can be neglected compared to k squared. Then this mode just consists of the two operators. This shear and that shear apply to the ground state. This operator has spin 2, and this operator has spin 2. That's why the mode at small k is spin 2. Spin, just to be completely clear, spin is tells you how the operator transforms under local rotation. So this operator is like d by dz squared, and this operator is like z squared. So they transform by double angle under the rotation. OK, so at small k, this mode is just a shear distortion of electron fluid. For integer quantum Hall states, the projected Hamiltonian, so projected to the lowest Landau level, is zero. The only meaning of the Hamiltonian for integer quantum Hall states is to declare these states to be holomorphic, or project out non-holomorphic ones. Under this Hamiltonian, this state costs no energy, so it's not an excitation. If we consider a more interesting Hamiltonian that has two body interactions, let's say, projected again to the lowest Landau level, then it's entirely obvious that the commutator of H with rho is non-zero. In fact, you can show that at small k, rho is very close to a true eigenstate, and the eigenenergy is non-zero, it's finite, and doesn't go to zero as number of particles goes to infinity. So for interacting Hamiltonians, rho bar of k is a shear distortion that costs energy. Non-interacting, it doesn't. Okay, so to summarize what I said, that small k GMP mode is a gapped propagating shear distortion of the fractional quantum Hall fluid. By the way, maybe here it's a good moment to tell you, I did discard all other terms here, but all other terms are higher spin operators. So those operators are still there, they're just not there at a very, very small momentum. Okay, so before introducing you the biometric theory, I would like to make one more comment, which is an idea again introduced by Gurren, McDonald, and Plasman, which is called single mode approximation. Single mode approximation is an assumption that can be tested numerically and experimentally, but mostly numerically, that observables at small k are saturated by this mode and not by the other modes in continuum. Let me give you two examples of numerical evidence for the single mode approximation to be precise. We can compare the energy spectrum, true energy spectrum that I showed you previously, to the expected energy of the GMP mode. So expectation value of the Hamiltonian. For large k, this is the true true energy spectrum, and this is the delta of k as defined there. So at large k, single mode approximation doesn't work. However, at small k, when k becomes smaller and smaller, this mode just saturates all of the energy spectrum. Another interesting observable that seems to be also saturated by this mode is the density-density correlation function, or the dynamic structure factor. So this plot is from the old paper by Plasman and He, where they calculate the dynamic structure factor. So it's a density-density correlation function at finite frequency. And they find that at small k, the density-density correlation function is saturated. So this big squares means the amount of the contribution to the dynamic structure factor from the GMP mode. So at small k, this correlation function almost entirely saturated. Not exactly, but almost entirely saturated by the GMP mode. But this is for 8 electrons. So we don't know what happens with the Spechian thermodynamic limit. If you don't like numerics, I can make an exact statement. Exact statement is that if we are close to pneumatic phase transition, when the GMP mode costs very, very small energy, then single mode approximation is exact. Okay, almost there. So before writing any Lagrangian or anything like this for the biometric theory, I have to set up the formalism. And this is the slide where I usually lose most of the audience. So if you still have any energy, mental energy left, focus it on this slide, please. So as I emphasized, the GMP mode is a spin to excitation, angular momentum to excitation. Therefore, it cannot be described by a gauge field. It must be described by a symmetric tensor. Let me call this symmetric tensor suggestively G hat. I'm going to, so this G hat will be the dynamical field in the theory. This G hat will be subject to a constraint. That determinant of G hat is bound to the determinant of the ambient metric. G is still the ambient metric I introduced previously. We're still talking about quantum Hall in weakly curved space. So for this G hat, it's a symmetric tensor. I also can introduce an analog of field binds by the same formula, but now I also give those field binds hat. So the true degree of freedom in the theory that I'll write actually will be the field binds rather than the metric. And this is a very subtle distinction, but it is will be very important. I will emphasize it as when the time comes. So just like in the usual geometric story, there is an ambiguity in writing this formula. So there is a spin connection associated to that ambiguity. It's still SO2, but now I also give it a hat. There is a gauge potential associated to that ambiguity. I call it omega and also give it a hat. Convention is that classical variables have no hats, background variables have no hats, and quantum variables have hats. So this data that I described may at first glance appear that I just say introduced two copies of Riemannian geometry in two dimensions. However, this is not the case because of this constraint. In order for this constraint to be valid in all coordinate systems, I have to transform the background geometry and this thing simultaneously.
So why is the constraint there?
I just impose it. I want, in other words, the reason I impose it is that if I don't impose it, that then a determinant of G will have its own dynamics. It will be a spin zero excitation, spin zero degree of freedom. I only want to leave the spin 2 degree of freedom.
Okay, I see. Uh-huh.
So if you want an answer that's supposed to make you feel that you understood something, but it's a lie, it's because a quantum Hall state is incompressible.
Does that constraint project to only area preserving diffeomorphism?
I beg your pardon?
Does that constraint only project
yes.
to area preserving diffeomorphism?
Yes. Another way of saying it is, I know post factum that there should be area preserving features appearing. And I want to only leave area preserving parts. So there's many ways I know I want, many reasons for which I want this constraint to hold. Okay, so this geometry involves two metrics, background metric and dynamic metric. Okay, so this now I cross the line when I call this not just a rank two tensor, but metric. And that explains the name. So this is not new structure. To the best of my knowledge, it appeared first in this paper, where people studied massive version of gravity, called they called biometric gravity. Maybe gravitational people know better the first reference. So if you would like to visualize that without thinking about two space-time fluctuating on the background of each other, you can visualize G hat as some pattern that fluctuates on top of a fixed geometry. So here I draw a sphere and the pattern on top of the sphere. So again, just so that the formulas that come are clear, G is background fixed data and G hat is a quantum degree of freedom. Okay, Lagrangian, 15 minutes. Okay. So we have now all this data. We would like to write a Lagrangian, but we would like to write it in assuming the least possible amount of things. So what I'm going to assume is that the Lagrangian that I'm going to write is invariant under coordinate reparameterizations and this gauge invariant. And this is it. So well, how can I do it? I'm going to write the Chern-Simons theory I showed you before. And I am going to write the lowest possible derivative term that couples Chern-Simons field to the dynamical spin connection, dynamic geometry. But also, I have to write a Hamiltonian, which is not usually a thing that appears in Trans-Siemens theory. Hamiltonian Trans-Siemens theory is zero. But this degree of freedom, as I emphasized previously, is gapped. So the energy scale must appear in the problem. And this energy scale is in this Hamiltonian. So this is the starting point. All of the phenomenology of the JMP mode and all of the phenomenology that I'm aware of quantum Hall states projected to the lowest Landau level that is beyond Trans-Siemens theory is in this Lagrangian. Okay. So what we're going to do to analyze it is we're going to integrate out the Trans-Siemens field first. And then we will be left with only dynamics of the spin 2 mode. When I integrate out Trans-Siemens field, I will generate a term that's made purely from the background data, and I'm going to discard this term because I know it. There's no dynamics in it. And the term that describes interaction of the spin 2 degree of freedom with background fields, A and G. So this BM and this BM is the same one. We generated just two terms, but I also fixed a particular form of the Hamiltonian, which I'll discuss in a second. So to the lowest order in derivatives, the only term that survives is the Wen-Z term that we discussed previously. However, the difference now is that this thing is a dynamical degree of freedom, not background. And this term is this H. I chose, again, the simplest form that I could possibly think of, that is a full square. And I'll describe the phenomenology of this H shortly. There are three parameters in this theory. One parameter is a quantized number that multiplies the Wen-Z term, dimensionless. This M is dimension full, that will set the gap of the JMP mode, or of the spin 2 mode. And this gamma is dimensionless parameter. This will allow us to access the regime where SMA is exact, mnemonic critical point. Okay, so comment number one. When K is one, there is no intra-Landau level dynamics, there is no JMP mode, so this thing should disappear. Yes?
Where is S? There's no S in this.
Yeah, that S is here. However, probably again, thanks for the question because I wanted to make this point, but I was about to forget it. Let's make sure that this Lagrangian goes back to the Trans-Siemens theory introduced previously. Okay, so to do that, let's choose gamma in such a way that this Hamiltonian is minimized by dynamical degree of freedom following the background degree of freedom. So the minimum of this Hamiltonian in for some values of gamma, and these are the values that I'll restrict myself to, is when dynamic rank 2 degree of freedom equals to background. This means that all of the geometric data with hats in the minimum of the potential are equal to the geometric data without hats. So what I am going to do, I'm going to take M to infinity. This will log G hat to G, and I can erase this hat because of it. So this Lagrangian in the limit when M goes to infinity, the spin 2 degree of freedom is infinitely heavy, just goes back to the Trans-Siemens theory. Because these two terms are now the same, and the S that I had previously is now S plus sigma. So this is actually a constraint already. It tells you that S plus sigma must be equal to the shift.
How is the determinant constraint built in here?
So far, it doesn't. But it will when I actually... So far, this is maybe esoteric Lagrangian, but I will actually do calculations with it. And when I do calculations, then this constraint will be crucial. So that's the Lagrangian that we wrote in the paper we saw. Okay, so our first comment is, let's understand what became of operator of electron density and operator of electric current. Okay, so to find the electron density, I need to take this Lagrangian and vary it with respect to A0. When I do this, I find the electron density, and it's given by the local Ricci curvature, but with hat. So the fluctuations of electron density are the same as fluctuations of local dynamic Ricci curvature. The fluctuations of electric current are the same as fluctuation of electric field that's made from the spin connection. Or another,
so,
yes?
So physically, can you explain why the R hat will be connected with the density? Because actually, the rho actually is a charge neutral operator, right? So define everything with a charge neutral operator.
Yeah.
So actually, the R hat will be some kind of vortex or flux of that omega hat.
Yeah.
And omega hat is also a charge neutral object.
Yes.
You're saying the flux of that omega hat will carry charge density.
Well, we'll
carry the electron.
You probably shouldn't be surprised by this formula, because when R hat follows background curvature, then electron density follows the background curvature.
Okay, that comes from the special interaction term you used.
Yes, that's
that
right.
Interaction term is that general enough actually? So
this is the only thing you can write with one derivative. There's nothing else you can write, given the data I described.
Okay.
This is one of the nice things about this theory. The way I will tell you, it will appear to be inevitable. Everything I write is the only thing you can write. But I like that you emphasize this point. In a couple of slides, this property will be very important. So Ricci scalar is a two-derivative operator. This will be very important, that density is a two-derivative operator. Okay, so with this identification, the continuity equation holds identically, because it's just a Bianchi identity, because R and E can be written in terms of gauge potential. And the main point I would like to emphasize is that all of the universal features of this theory are encoded in one single quantized number, sigma. So we're going to fix this number in terms of the topological data shortly. Okay, so before that, let's quickly discuss the potential that I wrote. So to understand the properties of this potential, I suggest to go to flat space, set Gij to be delta ij. Then this becomes, that used to be G hat times G, now it becomes trace. And since G hat is determinant 1, then minimum of this potential completely fixes the G hat. So when gamma, that coefficient, is smaller than 1, G hat has to be delta. When gamma is bigger than 1, G hat will be determined by gamma and will not be equal to delta. So in this phase, in the minimum of the potential, the G hat takes rotationally invariant configuration. And in this phase, G hat close to the minimum of the potential takes configuration that breaks rotational symmetry. And here I plotted the potential as a function of trace G minus 2. So here it's clear that the minimum at 0 corresponds to a symmetry preserving phase, and minimum at some finite value will tell you that there is a symmetry breaking phase. For the rest of the talk, I'll focus on that phase, when the theory is rotationally invariant. Okay, so we can actually do calculations with this theory. Okay, it's not just Lagrangian. To do calculations, I suggest to take the space flat and parameterize a determinant 1 matrix as exponent of a traceless matrix, and assume that we are close to the minimum of the potential where this Q is 0. So Q is 0 means this matrix is 0, means G hat ij is delta ij. And then we can take the action that I previously wrote and linearize it in terms of Q, and you just get very simple field theory, where sigma is still present, rho 0 is the density of the electrons. It's made from external magnetic fields and nu. And this m is the gap of the JMP mode, but now it got renormalized by 1 minus gamma, by the critical value of gamma. So if we tuned gamma close to 1, then this mass vanishes and you're at the critical point. So this is just Landau-Ginzburg theory, at least the potential. So this theory in this form was written in these two papers that I cited in the very beginning. But these papers got this coefficient differently from each other. So since this coefficient is the only universal property in this theory, besides the fact that the degree of freedom has spin 2, it's probably a good idea to get it fixed unambiguously. And turned out that the right value is not either one. So to fix this coefficient unambiguously, we would like to calculate an observable. The observable that we would like to calculate is called projected static structure factor. It's an equal time correlation function of electron density with electron density at momentum k, expanded at small momentum. So that's the definition. In this theory that I just presented you, density goes like Ricci scalar. So in general, it's a nonlinear function of metric. However, when you linearize it, it's just two derivatives acting on q. So s of k, which is density, density will go with four derivatives. It's k to the fourth. And its value is completely fixed by this number. From the microscopics, we know that if we are completely projected to the lowest Landau level, and the Kragg quantum Hall state is chiral, meaning that all of the H modes go in the same direction. There is a subtlety in how you define chiral, and I can explain it in private. Then this function is actually universal, and its value is given by shift minus one. This allows us to fix sigma to be shift minus one, twice, two sigma to be shift minus one. So nice property of this fixing is that when we restrict theory to integer quantum Hall states, shift is one. So there is no dynamics for integer quantum Hall states. That property that sigma vanishes for integer quantum Hall states was violated in both of these papers. So that's what got me interested in the question. Okay, so another nice feature of this theory is that it reproduces the JMP algebra that I told you about before, which was already foreseen by someone in the audience. And to reproduce it, you make a very neat observation. So let's take this term and turn off electric field and only leave constant magnetic field. Then the only thing that's left is constant magnetic field, so it's a constant, times omega zero, the time component of spin connection. But in terms of Willebrand, this term has just form pq dot. So, right, it's a Willebrand times derivative of Willebrand. It's just a symplectic form. So from this symplectic form, we read out the commutation relations between the Willebrands. The canonical commutation relations say that Willebrand and inverse Willebrand commute on delta epsilon. That doesn't tell you anything about the SL2R yet, I believe, but from this commutation relation, we can determine the commutation relation of metric, of components of metric with itself. And we find that metric, so I wrote here that complex coordinates, does form a SL2R algebra. So algebra of global area preserving diffeomorphisms. So the ZZ component with Z bar component commutes on ZZ bar, and Z bar with ZZ bar commutes on Z bar. So this is the SL2R algebra. So the SL2R algebra did appear just naturally from this term. And to write this term, we had no freedom. So we had no, this algebra could not have not appeared. Okay, so that is the SL2R algebra. But since we know how to write down, I'm skipping this now, how to write down Ricci in terms of metric, then knowing commutation relation for metric gives us commutation relation for Ricci. So Ricci with Ricci commutes on k curl q times Ricci at shifted momentum. And this formula coincides with the JMP algebra when the latter, JMP algebra meaning, is expanded in momentum to the leading order. Okay, so last minute or two, I'll make a general statement. So we actually went beyond the regime that I discussed, meaning that we added higher gradients terms to the theory. And turns out that if you're looking only for universal phenomena, there are only two terms that you can write that will have quantized dimensionless coefficients. The term that we just discussed and the gravitational Chern-Simons term. Of course, to do effective field theory properly, if you went higher in derivatives here, you also have to write higher in derivatives terms in the Hamiltonian. And that's what we did. So the general structure of the theory is that Hamiltonian breaks down SL2R down to SL2. This is because G hat, unlike the omega, breaks SL2R. It's only, I forgot to make this point. The omega, so this term, has SL2R symmetry, which is hidden. If you take Willebinds and act by SL2R matrix on these two indices, then omega zero is invariant under SL2R. Okay, so generally what happens is that this term breaks SL2R, this term generates SL2R Poisson structure, and the high derivative term modifies the Poisson structure in such a way that it breaks SL2R, but is still closed. But there is a very mysterious structure when you go one higher order derivatives that we don't entirely understand. But it probably means that the true theory should not be written in terms of just spin 2 degree of freedom. One has to add all of the higher spin degree of freedom that I neglected in the introduction. Okay, so probably the last slide is, let me tell you just what we can calculate with the theory. So we can calculate the projective static structure factor up to the k to the 6, which is universal up to the k to the 6, and is not universal beyond that point. It follows from the theory, it follows from microscopic considerations separately. We can calculate the dispersion of the GMP mode, which I didn't have time to tell you about, up to k squared. We clearly see absence of the GMP mode and pneumatic transition in integer quantum Hall states because the entire action disappears, or rather the dynamical part of it disappears. Particle Hall symmetry is manifest, although I didn't have time to tell you about it. If you want to consider a state as particle Hall conjugate to a given quantum Hall state, all you need to do is to change these two signs. This is it. Okay, so you can calculate Girvan McDonald plasmon algebra holds to the leading and subleading order. You can calculate Hall conductivity to k squared, Hall viscosity to k squared, and you see that the theory clearly needs to be extended because it breaks the area-preserving diffeomorphism, which is assumption that we wanted out of it. So there is other stuff, but I don't have time to talk about it. I can just leave you with open problems. So let's say empty. I don't know, I probably shouldn't read them. If you are curious about any of these points, you can ask me, either now or in private. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Yeah,
using that. So the biometric mass term that you wrote down, it looks different than the DRGT.
That's correct.
Mass term.
That's correct. So in that story is exceptionally complicated because these people want to, you know, make claims that they are describing true theory that goes, you know, that is valid in UV. So, you know, they have to kind of ensure that it's unitary and that there are no ghosts. This is an effective field theory. I don't really care.
Oh, so you just don't worry about...
Yeah, what I did, just, you know, for fun, I took their potentials and wrote it in 2 plus 1. And turns out that if I write in this formalism their potential, there is no pneumatic phase transition. I don't know if it's a deep thing or not, but that's a fact that is true. So their potentials don't support pneumatic phase transition, whereas this one does.
So in the dispersion of the GMP mode that you plot, actually the minimum is actually not at k equals 0.
Yeah, the minimum was at high k.
Yeah, but actually after a pneumatic transition, it still condenses zero momentum or condenses some other?
Pneumatic phase transition is k equals 0.
Still condenses the k equals 0.
Yes, because if you condense in any other value of k, you introduce a length scale,
yes, sure,
which is
sure.
Inverse k.
That's
so
right.
This also breaks translational symmetry.
Right, so you're saying that so close to transition, the zero, the energy at zero moment actually will go
yes,
down.
Yes, and that's why it's clear it's distinct from the continuum. So in the close to transition, you can make exact statements. But things that I compared it with, I probably should have emphasized it more. The universality of structure factor and so on, these things are valid if you're in the lowest Landau level, irrespectively of the phase transition. So this theory represents something more than just a critical theory that's close to a critical point.
So I guess about this relation to fracton order.
Is this recorded?
Well, I mean, you just have some higher rank tensor field.
This is recorded, right? This is recorded.
It's recorded, yes.
Right, in private. In private. It's, there is, I believe there is a relation, but I can only tell about it.
Okay.
The other question?
You said something at the end about some reason to expect a bit, something about the structure that made you suspect that you had to include higher spin.
Yes.
What was that?
That's right. So this, so there are two independent reasons why I believe this to be true. One reason is that when I want to go one step higher in gradients, one of the quantities that I calculate is the projected static structure factor that goes to k to the, that's is k to the 6. So to calculate it from microscopics, you know, I still can take the density operator that I described in the beginning of the talk, and I can calculate the static structure factor just from the microscopic, considering the density operator. I have to expand it not to spin 2 fields, but to spin 3 fields to be able to calculate this object. But in biometric theory, it comes out from the spin 2 field, but I broke the symmetry that I wanted to keep, the SL2R, area preserving diffs. So to me, and maybe, you know, I just am too biased, it says that I'm trying to fake the real degrees of freedom by adding higher gradient terms. So I'm not capturing everything. So perhaps spin 2, spin 3, and higher degrees of freedom will allow to simultaneously calculate things and keep the symmetry. But the symmetry is bigger than the SL2R, it's W infinity. And another reason why this belief to be true, which is the part I didn't tell you about. We recently, and this is the work with a student of Son, we rederived the biometric theory from something that's called composite Fermi-liquid theory. And that theory is essentially semi-classical, and there are degrees of freedom in it. And the degrees of freedom are form an infinite tower of higher spin fields, starting from spin 2. So they have different origin. This is distortions of the Fermi surface and so on. So in that theory, where the spin 3, spin 4, spin 5,000 degrees of freedom are just to begin with present, the higher gradient terms are generated when you integrate out higher spin degrees of freedom. So this is what I think is generic fact about this biometric theory. I integrated something out, and I cannot see what it is within the theory. But with this theory, I can see what I integrated out, but the problem is that this theory is linearized. So I believe that there is a general W infinity theory that upon linearization describes Fermi's, the composite Fermi liquid, and upon integrating out higher spin modes describes biometric theory. So there is some bigger structure that I'm missing. That's the best I could do to answer this question. So if you want to take something out of this, is I believe there are higher degrees of freedom, so higher spin degrees of freedom, they must be added in order to reproduce all of the phenomenology of quantum Hall states, not just the things I described.
In the DRGT story, they were led, originally they had a structure analogous to what you have, where they had a two metrics, one of which was sort of non-dynamical and the other one was dynamical. And then they were naturally led to make both of them dynamical. Is there?
Yeah, so this is one of the open problems. This is different setup. So you can consider something that's called quantum Hall bilayer, which is two quantum Hall states that are close to each other and they interact. If they are far separated, each one of them has its own spin 2 degree of freedom. They're blurred close together, there is non-trivial interaction. It's very similar to their story where they imagine kind of deconstructing the dimension. I can reconstruct the dimension by stacking a lot of quantum Hall states. So it's a different story. I just focused on the simplest case, where there is one. So it's possible to have multiple dynamic metrics.
Well, if there are no further questions, thank you, Andrea, and you're here today and
tomorrow.
Today and tomorrow, so make sure you come.
Thank you.